to everybody who's managed to find the room this morning, and welcome to Sharon, who's participating remotely. I'm expecting James and I think Lynn as well will be participating remotely at some point today, presumably when they wake up. We had a very constructive session for yesterday amongst the few of us who were in town, and we have somewhere an agenda for today, which I can't immediately find. It's a good start. For Alice, I've got some housekeeping things. First of all, we can invoke the Chatham House rule, which we did yesterday, so we've had a practice of that. For recording purposes, please remember to identify yourself when you start speaking. The session will be recorded, as always, streamed, and we have a bridge open for remotely attending members. This meeting is open to participants. Welcome to our observer at the moment. Can we start with a roll call?
Keith Grasek with Verisign is joining us as an observer representing the whole class of observers in the world who care so deeply. Kathy Kleinen, representing the Registry Stakeholder Group.
Alice Johnson, I can stop.
Olaf Nordling, I can stop. We also do have Sergeant Rahman Khan as a remote observer.
Cephris Alak.
Lutz Alak.
Sarah Hussein Hussein.
Susan Calvici, CSG.
Wilfried Wilber, Sunday morning, Edris Council.
Emily Taylor.
Hi Sharon, we miss you. Kathy. It's nice here. It's really, it's quite nice.
As a backbencher, I do notice Louis Lee, the chair of the ASO Address Council.
Okay, we've got an agenda posted up there, which we can all see. Hopefully you can see it as well. Sharon, does anybody want to propose any amendments to that agenda? Or can we adopt it?
Do we want to just go down to the bottom and show what's in the afternoon session?
The afternoon will be bringing on our discussions of recommendations and thinking about how to take the draft on so that we can get it completed by the end of November. We've got some housekeeping to do this morning. Actually, thinking about the discussion of the user insight report, I'd like to wait until Lynn is on the line on that. So we may well continue with our slightly shapeless discussions about the report structure and see if we can just continue our iterative work on the recommendations while we're waiting. So let me know if that's going to be a problem. So let's adopt the agenda. I would say, though, I think for everybody, we're very far advanced now in our work. We all know each other well. I think we have a very good group dynamic. We all shared yesterday that our objectives for this meeting in Dakar, which is stretching over yesterday, today and tomorrow, is to leave the meeting with an agreed set of recommendations which are concise and which capture the consensus of the group. That might mean that some of us have to let go deeply held views or compromise our views in some way, but our objective, I think, if we can think in terms of advancing this subject and breaking some of the deadlock and paralysis that has afflicted this subject over the last 10 to 12 years, then I think that we're doing a good job. And I would hark back to something James said quite early on in our discussions, as he's not here to say it himself, is that the only way we can really fail in our task is by not having a set of consensus recommendations. So with that, I think we made some very good progress over the last couple of meetings and again yesterday. So while we have this agenda, this is a very long way of saying, while we have this agenda, I think that let's still advance this overriding objective to get the recommendations nailed, and also to share our views on the draft report as it currently stands, even if they're quite high level at this stage. Okay? So can we have, we'll do the housekeeping stuff, adoption of preliminary reports. So we've got one from the 12th of October, which was a very, very short call, if you remember, when we were just literally whipping through fairly. Do you want to just get it up on the screen, please, Alice? Sharon, can you hear okay? Okay, so you should have up on the Adobe Room a copy of the preliminary report. Does any... Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Well, so we've got it here in the room. Does anybody have any comments on this report? Are we comfortable that it's a faithful representation of our discussions last week? Any amendments, any corrections of fact? Can we just adopt this? Session held on Saturday. Okay, well, I'll start and then others can correct me. Sharon and Sarmad, you should have a copy of this document entitled Brainstorming Session. It was circulated to the list by Alice yesterday evening. Does everybody have a copy? Any of our observers that would like to have a copy, then they're welcome to. I'll just give you a couple of minutes to... Mm-hmm. It's on two sides.
formal papers, then I think we should actually take that as one thing for our recommendations to amend that. Because my feeling is that if you agree that half of the registration data is bogus, then you can just stop using GUIs in the first place. I mean, if you query stuff and every other answer is bogus, then why would you start querying the whole system in the very beginning?
It does sound quite surprising, yes. Olaf?
Just on logistics, please speak very close to the mic and use diaphragm support if possible.
But we're not saying that 50% of the registrations are unreachable. We're saying that whatever percentage is unreachable, we'd like to reduce it by 50%.
Send her the URL and then we can have a look at it on the screen. But so while we're getting that sorted out, I'll just whip through the rest of the recommendations. If you can just scroll up, please. So we have covered accuracy, and then the third one is about the our recommendation that WHOIS be a strategic priority for ICANN, for the community, for the organisation. And that means that compliance needs to be adequately resourced, but that this is a board-level staff responsibility, or at least very senior. I'm not quite sure if there's any staff members on the board. There aren't, are there? It's the CEO type level of responsibility. It should be a component of the strategic plan with the allocation of budget and clear, transparent planning through the cycle. The fourth element is communication. So there should be cross-community outreach, including the community outside with specific interest in this issue. And I think that probably what was in our minds at that point, Sharon, was particularly the law enforcement community. And then we need something clear, concise and communicated on privacy and proxy, which we can't immediately agree. But I think you can see the sort of level that we're hovering around. We're trying to go... Oh, sorry, it's over the page. We need to define what these terms mean, and in fact there is a study that has done, I think, a pretty good job on defining those terms, privacy and proxy, but also that the components, I think in a way we need to define the expectations going down to this, in that I expect it would be helpful for our findings to make the clear statement that there is a legitimate use of privacy and proxy services, whether that be for individuals who are wishing to keep their personal data off the public record, or indeed corporations, and that is a very clear message we have had from across the community. However, there need to be standards of reveal and relay so that it is possible for those with a legitimate interest in uncovering that information, whether they be law enforcement or other users of WHOIS, so that they can get, they know what to expect, and if they don't get what they expect, there are consequences of unmet expectations. That's basically the components of where we're going on privacy proxy. So the service itself is fine, but it needs to actually be standardised and the standards communicated to stakeholders, and there need to be consequences of failure to meet those expectations. So that's about the level of recommendation. So, first of all, can I ask, what are we missing? We've had the opportunity overnight to think about it. What are we missing? Have we got the right level? Do we need to go through the recommendations in our draft and see how they fit? What's next, please? Thank you, Susan. For that is obviously a very key element that we've not highlighted. It's implicit in the discussions of privacy proxy, but how would you propose us to include it as a separate heading in its own right, or as something
implementation? Right. And then the other.
Into the list under the second heading, availability will be part of implementation. So we've got these two phrases that will, I think, run through the report of the concepts of accuracy and availability are starting to be quite a strong through line in the report. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I had a second one. So, and this came out of a discussion of reference, but, and I think we've discussed this, but I don't see it. Owns the data, and so therefore who's responsible for providing accurate data? Does the registry own it? Do the registrars? In the .com right now, I don't think the registry owns that. The registrars may not own it. Really, the registrars own that data and should be responsible for providing accurate data, but if they don't, then there's no viable consequence. There is a consequence, but it's not very viable.
Okay.
And I would put that under policy, that we really outline that for IT folks when they're drafting their policy.
Thank you. Can I have any reactions to that? This is something that we discussed way back in January, but we've kind of dropped the ball on a little bit. Who owns the data? Why is this an important question? Thank you.
Wilfried here, just to define the terminology or the interpretation. What do we mean by who owns? I mean, I think there is consensus that the only source of the correct information is with the registrant. The question of ownership is more like a question of copyright on the collection of data. And I think the responsibility is with the registrant, but the ownership of the whole collection is more like with the registrar, or depending on thin or thick, with the registry. I think we should not mix those two aspects.
Okay. I think that's a very key point. We need to be a bit clearer on. I've got a list here. Seth, Lutz, Samad, I think, and Kathy.
Following up from Wilfried, I had similar thoughts. I think we may go down the wrong path by talking about ownership, because I think it is an issue of copyright that may vary from country to country, defined differently, and the idea of ownership of a database doesn't really address the problems that we're trying to address, which is who has responsibility. And so I think the idea of ownership might be important to address so that somebody else doesn't go down the wrong path, but I think we have to focus on the responsibility.
Like to underline this argument, we should not discuss about ownership of data or domain names or something like this, because it's regulated in very different ways. Only we can talk about origin of data and correctness of this origin or correctness of data, copies of data. That's all.
Sama.
some ways, this may have been what James was trying to get to when he created all those kind of elegant terms, data producers, data controllers, data processors. So the data producer is the, you know, is the registrant, the individuals, the organizations, the corporations. The data controllers, you know, just to repeat things we already know, but others may not. Data controllers are the organizations, in this case one organization, ICANN, responsible for promulgating the rules, and the data processors being the registrars and registries involved in the collection. We've got a split responsibility here. So maybe that's, you know, maybe that may be a way to say it, rather than our determining who owns the data, that there is a split responsibility, and begin to carry those terms through in our explanation, and to explain that, because who owns databases and data is a massive, internationally, is an enormous legal case.
Thank you very much. So I've got to get Susan and then Salmad.
So I may have used the wrong term, because I didn't want to start that debate. But I'm really, what my point is we need to, someone, ICANN, probably most likely being ICANN, needs to make it very clear who is responsible for giving, for providing that data. In my mind, it would be the registrant, and being responsible at the end of the day for the accuracy of that information. But the registrar taking in that information has a responsibility also. So if we pull out the term own, because I did not want to get into a database ownership discussion, but who is responsible for providing the data, but who also is responsible for ensuring that the data is accurate. I think it's a two-pronged, but at the beginning of the whole process, it's got to be the registrant. And right now, there's really no viable option of sort of holding their feet to the fire to ensure that they are providing accurate data. In fact, there's no mechanism to even make sure that they provide data of any, you know, I mean, we've seen that a, you know, so that was really my point there. But I do think, and this will come into the discussion in the thick and thin, that the registrars feel like that's their customer data. I've heard that many a time. And so somewhere down the line, it should be defined on who really can you controls the data, maybe not owns it, but controls it. But I don't, you know, I don't want to get into a copyright discussion.
Sure, but I think we're all kind of trying to we're trying to articulate this concept of responsibility for accuracy, that is shared, but also that I think this is the point that you're making. It has particular ramifications in the IDN space. Responsibility for availability as well. And that availability meaning not only having the things switched on, but having it readable in a consistent form. Sorry, I have you in my list, Sama. Did you want to come in with a comment here?
So if we are going to have rightly perhaps multiple stakeholders for making this data available, I think we should also then think about how that distributes the accuracy and availability kind of responsibilities, because then you can't make one person responsible for it.
Yes, and if you don't make one person responsible for it, does it mean that you're not making anybody responsible in reality?
So yeah, that's what I'm saying. So we really need to go to accuracy and availability discussions and sort of divide it up into smaller bits, that what are different aspects of accuracy and what are different aspects of availability, and then who is clearly responsible for each aspect. If we go down that path and say that there are actually combined ownership, otherwise it's not very easy to say that there's combined ownership and then somehow these people will keep things accurate and available.
I think let's think about this concept in terms of the contractual provisions that already exist, because I think that they quite clearly state, my recollection is that they quite clearly state that the buck stops with the registrant, because actually only the registrant knows what the real picture is. The registrar does have responsibilities to amend, maintain, update, but ultimately, if it's wrong, then the registration itself becomes subject to cancellation. Sorry, Kathy.
So I was just wondering if maybe we put it questions across policy and implementation. So would anybody object to taking out the word owns?
Yes.
And saying who is responsible for the data? And I think we're leaning towards registrant, but there may be answers. And then under implementation, who is responsible for the availability and accuracy of the data?
Nice.
And I think Susan was right. This is a gap, but clearly a lot of our work over time has been aimed at addressing both of these questions. So it covers a whole bunch of recommendations that didn't have a home already under our brainstorming yesterday. So.
Now, one thing we have not really nutted out at all, this is my new word of the day, because Peter taught it to me yesterday, it's Australian. Nutting out? I think it means just staying and nutting it out, just like... just staying and arguing until you agree. We haven't... We've talked, we've referred to thick-thin. It's an area where I know that there is a range of views amongst this group, and I don't think we'd be doing it justice if we just pop it straight into the recommendations without really giving it some airtime here, and this is our chance here. So would anybody like to speak to this, introduce it, and say what our recommendation on thick-thin should be, if anything?
We should have buzzers.
Without expressing, I just hope that we can repeat this discussion again in the afternoon when we have James
Absolutely.
With us. So I just wanted to note that.
Well, and maybe we should delay it till James is here. But my recommendation is that we make the recommendation that I can to move to a whole thick who is model.
Can you help us by highlighting, you know, thinking back to the inputs that we got when we were asking the community, can you help us by what's the basis for this? Is this your personal view or the IPC view or the business constituency view, or is this something that you have seen coming through from more than one stakeholder group across our research?
So, didn't mention my name before, so Susan speaking. I'm so bad at that. It is definitely a CSG view, so IPC and BC, which I represent, but also it's just from a practical view, having used the who is as much as I have used it, to have minimum of 900 sources. I'm not sure really where that number lies. You know, I've heard there's over 900 registrars. To have 900 sources makes just imposing an accuracy or availability demand on 900 different sources an issue. It used to be a thick who is back in the 90s, and then for very good business reasons, I think it was switched, but I think we've gone past the need for that, and we've seen in the .org registry where you must have handled that, Kathy. You went from...
Before my time there, but by 2003, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we've seen a large registry move to the thick who is model, so it can be done. And I just think for moving forward with .com is the biggest registry in the world, and I would assume it will continue to be, that it seems like we should have one source for who is. And the practical part of it is, and I outlined this in the Consumer Trust, you know, if you are looking for a domain name who is record, then you may have to go through many hurdles to find it. I use that one example where I checked four different registrars, none of them had it. Finally went to thin who is, looked up their, you know, found their URL for the who is. I don't even think it worked, but poked around their site, found their who is tool, and then was able to look up the record. So if we expect people to look at a who is record and find that it is, you know, to see who they're doing business with, we should make it fairly easy.
Thank you very much for that, Susan. Now, my list is Seth, Lutz, Kathy, did I see your hand up? No. Wilfried? Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think the survey, I haven't read the survey results. I think that will bolster Susan's points. But when Lynn and I were working on what domain name to use as an example for the study, I think came across one where the thin who is was referencing a thick who is that had a broken link. So, I mean, that's just one of many examples. It seems to me the people that one reason people may be advocating for the thin model is because they don't want to make it too easy to find the data. And I think the more honest approach is we either figure out a way to protect the privacy rights when there are privacy rights, and otherwise we adopt a model that makes sense, that's just logical. It's not logical to make people hunt all around. We're all pretty skilled people, and we have trouble. So it seems to me. And the alternative that I've heard described in this group before is for ICANN to have a portal that makes the thick available. In other words, if there was a reason not to have a thick with the registry, to have ICANN be responsible for a portal that will always take you to a thick. I don't know if that makes sense from a cost or a business point of view, but that would be another alternative.
Thank you very much, Seth. Lutz?
I'd just like to point out that IANA is running a thin-who-is model for all internet entities, like domain names, addresses, IP addresses, or autonomous system numbers, in a thin-who-is model. You always can start at whois.iana.org, and they are pointing you to the next who is server who is responsible for, and also provide the contact detail for the contractual partner which is running the registry there. So just keep in mind that we already have such a thin-who-is model. We have a defined starting point, and we just have to acknowledge it. It's IANA.org, whois.iana.org. It's accessible using the whois protocol or HTTP.
Just a clarification, Lutz, you're saying that there already is a thin whois at IANA. So are you saying that with one lookup, you can get all of the information on any domain name in the world at IANA?
No, thin whois is just pointing to the next party. To the next registry, IANA respond you with an entry saying the registry for org is Aphelias, and the whois server running by Aphelias is located, has the name of the following.
So basically, what it does is if you don't know who runs a particular top level, it will take you to the top level provider, and then. So in practical term, thinking from the consumer looking for thick whois data, then it adds one to two more steps in their search.
It can completely hidden. It's only a technical issue. We have a central starting point for every question about whois.
I'm going to go to Wilfried, Kathy, Bill.
Yeah, Wilfried, just to follow up on Lutz, technically, you are probably almost right. From a user interface point of view, it's useless because I'm just querying HP.com because I'm a fan of HP, but just because I took one of those that came to my mind, and the only thing that I get is a text line from the IANA. Which makes me to copy paste the URL for VeriSign grs.com, which is nice, but then I have to key in hp.com just once again. But sort of, I agree, technically, you are right. From a user interface point of view, I think this is just useless for the general public. But you want to reply to that one immediately. So go ahead.
You are speaking like the first implementers of the DNS system. It can't be true that I have to ask a different server and do not have the right answer for my question, why I should gave up my host's table on my local computer. It's the same question here. You usually do not query the database directly. You have a Whois client or web client, so you can expect that this client is implementing following such references. For instance, most of the all Whois clients referred by the user insight survey just do this. They follow they provide the user interface and following the chain, like a resolver on the ISP for DNS names. Nobody is expecting to query every instance by itself.
Yeah, but that was just immediate reaction to your contribution. What I wanted to get at, actually, is slightly different aspect, and that's just the aspect of availability. I cannot imagine that this particular industry actually gets its heads around reasonably high availability if you have a vastly distributed thing. If they would use a mature technology like DNS to implement that service, I would immediately agree with you. Given that this is a pretty different environment, I cannot imagine any approach which actually makes the data available to the man or the woman in the streets at a reasonably high percentage of getting the answer. And that's the only reason why I would personally, not representing any organization, would argue in favor of a thick Whois model.
Okay. That's very helpful. Thank you. I've got Kathy, Bill. Does anybody else want to speak to this subject?
I've got lots to say on the subject, but I just wanted to share again that I think James should be with us during it because so much. Oh, James, are you on? Excellent. Perfect. That's really good. Okay. What time is it his time? Oh, my gosh. Okay. It's the middle of the night. Good, because it's an important discussion for all of us to be with together. Yesterday I heard words that I thought were very interesting and useful: harmonization, findability. Just kind of want to. I'm thinking about what we've done in other areas, which is not to present the answer, because in some ways that's making the policy, but presenting a goal and letting the ICANN community set the direction and the details and the implementation. Just wanted to throw it out there. It's what we've done in other areas. It may work here as well.
Thank you, Kathy. Can I ask you to think about how you would, not now, sorry to put you on the spot, but can you think about how you would articulate that goal, thinking about what we learn from the consumer study, you know, that we've, and I'm sure we'll discuss this in more detail, that we have seen from the consumer study two things. First, from the qualitative, I mean, it was quite comical watching people trying to do a Whois search. It gave us quite a laugh, didn't it, watching their suffering. And secondly, from the quantitative, you know, that there is, I think, quite a clear line coming through from this consumer research saying that people trust, their trust in the internet is enhanced when they can, when they're satisfied that they can identify the people responsible for a website with which they're transacting. So I'd like you, not now, but to think about how you would articulate the goals in terms of, you know, their responsibility, their usability.
Should we summarize for James? First, can you hear us? And second, just really.
Yeah. Okay, Bill, thank you for waiting patiently.
Sure. So, Bill Smith, Kathy used a word, harmonization, and I'm wondering if we can somehow harmonize thick, thin, and what is going to be coming in the new GTLDs. I believe that I have not read all of the draft applicant guidebook, but I believe there is terminology and around Whois, and that's the direction that the organization is moving in. It is a, it's gone through a PDP process. It's been accepted by the community. And I, from a consumer perspective, having what I believe now will be at least three versions of who is a non-starter for a consumer. To Lutz's point, I, like Wilfried, went to whois.iana.org. I chose PayPal. That's the company I work for. And I received the same information that I should go to verisign-grs.com, which I did, and received no response. It then says, did you mean www.verisign? So you're, the suggestion that the technology is there currently to do this recursively and end up with a result based on fact. Now, it sounds like we have three. Okay. It does not work. So the system, while it could do it, does not do it.
Thank you very much. James, are you on the line? No. Lutz, you wanted to come in, and then you, Susan?
Not really. I do not want to commend us on a serious base, thanks.
So, this is Susan Kawaguchi. The IRT, well, there's an IRTP resolution, and I get all these groups mixed up, but the... So, there's
Ooh,
a...
Alphabet soup to me.
Right,
so.
A resolution right now that was made last June in calling for a study of moving to a thick who is, and so we're not the only group in ICANN land that is thinking about this, but they they're definitely they've asked for an issue report, and you know, to consider any other positive and negative effects that are likely to occur that would need to be taken into account when deciding whether a requirement of thick who is for all incumbent GTLDs would be desirable or not. So I think we can play on that, and maybe we don't make the recommendation, yes, move to a thick who is, but to seriously consider moving to a thick who is, that somebody should be, ICANN should be looking at this. They should be identifying all the problems with the current who is situation and then making an improvement. So, and I can send this around if you'd like. Yeah.
Sharon, are you still on the line? Can you still hear us?
James is still, he's on the bridge, but he has no voice, so I'm projecting whatever he's saying
okay,
on the screen.
Okay. Thanks, James. You have, sorry to hear you have no voice.
Does anybody have a phone that he can call and maybe put him on speaker?
He's sick.
He's on the bridge, but he has no voice.
Oh, it's a human.
Sorry, not laughing. Laughing because we've just realised, not because we're laughing at your suffering. We are. So, James, can I just check your point is that some registrars would feel uncomfortable having VeriSign hold their customer data?
Okay, so we need to talk closer to the mic. May I? Okay, James, you've heard the problems. What might be an approach that would make sense from a registrar perspective that would address some of the concerns of findability that we're seeing? And I'll just add for everyone that the new GTLDs in many areas have rules that are different than the incumbent, than the existing GTLDs, many, many areas, because of the nature of the new entrants coming in. So this isn't the only area they're different, but I'd love to know from both Sharon and James how this problem that we've heard now from so many groups can be addressed consistent with the reasons for why the decentralization of the .com data took place.
I think we may have a problem with the bridge because I've got two participants saying they're finding it very hard to hear anything. So I don't know. James, I don't know whether you got Kathy's question. Good.
We're not speaking.
No, we're so, James, you're saying that there's no reason that a thin model shouldn't work, but it's probably poorly implemented. Can you, while you're typing your answer to my question, I'd like to hear from the room a response to that.
Can we all type? Would that be... And I'm not even on, but if Sharon can't hear anything.
I think that we're going to struggle... with that. I think we had a call where we all tried to type and then we all just got so annoyed that we stopped. Oh, good. Glad you're back. So, James, I'd like to know how that could be implemented, but first of all, I'd like to hear from the room any responses to that. Bill?
So, first, from as a technical person, if we were to do a thin who is and take it to the extreme, as has been suggested from time to time, I don't wonder. I know that rate limiting becomes an issue, okay? Because anyone in the chain who rate limits will cause this entire system to break and to fail. So from my perspective, that's a technical reason to not do this unless rate limiting is no longer allowed. So if registrars are willing to say, can't do any rate limiting, then a thin who is a possibility, okay, but only a possibility. That is a necessary requirement. It is not sufficient.
Point.
Rate limiting? From a single IP address, I can only get 3 an hour or 3 a day. And registrars do this all the time.
So just to clarify Bill's point, there's a, I think it's actually a contractual obligation preventing automated bulk queries, which does, I must say, I do wonder how some of the services that are out there on the market manage to exist and provide up-to-date information without doing this. But Bill is quite right that some of the registrars implement rate limiting in order to prevent automated bulk queries, is my understanding.
And I just wanted to read James's question, which is up there, that says, I don't understand the relationship between who is quotas and the thick-thin question.
Okay, so my point is that if we're using a thin model, that says that, and using Lutz's argument where we start at whois.iana.org and traverse a tree, if anyone in that tree, in the hierarchy, imposes a rate-limiting factor, at some point it will be impossible to get down to anything below that point in the tree. That's just a fact of the way it would work. So that's a problem.
I've got Lutz and Wilfried. And then I think I want to just keep us focused here. Let's hear these two comments, and then let's try and refocus on what recommendation, if anything, we are going to make or propose on thick, thin, who is. I've heard the word harmonisation. We've been thinking about the user experience, but let's just refocus, please.
Currently, almost all services are rate-limiting access in order to prevent automatic bulk queries. We have already in DNS system or anything else, we have rate-limiting. in order to prevent malicious clients to stop the whole system, to prevent denial of service attacks. So rate limiting, in my opinion, is currently almost all implemented and can't be a showstopper for a different approach if using the same technology as we are currently using. Coming back to your question, what we should propose, that's very difficult because all of the proposals have a valid reason to be proposed or not. FinWho is, that was the reason behind my push up of this approach, is a way to fulfill local law by the FinWho is provider on the final end or in the intermediate step. But on the other hand, it has a lot of drawbacks, of course. Bill pointed out some of them. I do not think that we can make a proposal which of the implementation models can be correct. Even FinWho has a lot of advantages and a lot of disadvantages. Somebody has to decide. We can't decide which is the correct solution for all these proposals. Coming back to my very first original proposal to remove DNS, to remove WHO services altogether because it's not needed any place, this has advantages and disadvantages. It might be a possible solution. We do not know and we can't decide. We can't make a proposal to the board saying, please use the following approach. It's far outside of our scope. But what we can do is to make clear that there are several approaches exist and somebody has to decide which should be the solution of the future.
Thank you very much for that, Lutz. I've got Wilfried.
Yeah, trying to be brief because this is going very deeply into technology and into implementation. So just as an observation and to round out and to summarize my point of view, Bill, your worries are well-founded given a particular approach to implementation. There are potentially other implementations which could work around this limitation but would introduce other shortcomings. So I really don't want to go into any implementation details. What I want to state here is that whatever you do in the direction of distributed database stuff and lookup in a distributed global infrastructure tremendously increases the complexity, and this usually has the effect of tremendously decreasing the availability. And that's my only reason why I think it is sort of a better approach to do some sort of centralized implementation. On the other hand, I do agree with Lutz here that we might as well, like in other situations and other recommendations, we might just state sort of what we want to achieve as a recommendation, and then maybe as a DNS speak additional section, we might include suggestions how to achieve that, but anybody's free to propose a different approach.
I think this is a much more constructive line of thinking from both of you. I think it chimes in with what you were suggesting earlier, Kathy, so you're in the queue too, so please go ahead.
The word I keep coming back to is findability, and what we seem to be hearing is that a lot of the links are broken. A lot of the paths that have been created to find the data within the database aren't working the way they're supposed to, and if they did, how much would that reduce what's going on? Unfortunately, I just wanted to share from a record point of view, this is not an issue we circulated widely. We did hear widely from certain groups on it. But Keith has shared with me, and let me just read because my email's down, continuing on about some of the difficulties, the technical difficulties of what might happen.
Kathy, just to clarify, are you taking instructions from one of our silent observers?
I'm not. I am taking emails. and he knows I haven't agreed with everything he wrote, but this I wanted to share, unless there's an objection, which would be valid. Because I think I mentioned at one point that, you know, VeriSign's impacted by this. So a key concern about any transition from the thin to thick is the operational impact of the transition on registrars. Registrars do not all operate who is in the same way or in the same format, which I didn't know, and that's one of the reasons I'm sharing it with you. So any requirement to transition to a single database would require a significant amount of work. Doable, but significant amount of work, and this needs to be understood. So I just wanted to share that I didn't realize that there are so many different formats out there. So it's an interesting issue. I think it goes to what's already been talked about. But again, let me share a word, findability. There were reasons this database was created the way it was, and .com remains a database that's very different from what we're talking about with the new GTLDs. So is the issue, do we want to give if we're looking for an end result, what would that be? And let me throw out there, findability.
Yeah, and that's to help our thinking, maybe to free up our thinking. Let's think about what we would like the situation to be for the next Whois review team when they start their work. What would be the ideal world for them to be starting in? Bill?
So a point of clarification, what's the difference between Whois in the new GTLDs and Whois in the rest of the world?
Okay. I think that what the easiest thing for us to do is to ask Alice to find, there is a section in the applicant guidebook where the application form questions are set out and the criteria for what meets the standard required. There is a whole section on Whois.
No, what I took Kathy's comment to mean is that there is a different purpose for Whois in new GLTs versus Whois in .com, .net, .org. And if that's the case, I would like to understand it. I'm assuming, perhaps incorrectly, that it's the same purpose, to find out who owns a domain.
Okay, who's in my list? I've got Sarmad, Kathy.
I think further on what Bill is saying, I am also not clear if there are any additional requirements on Whois in the draft applicant guidebook in addition to...
I think what would be helpful is if we can have a look at them on the screen. Just to inform ourselves, this is just to see what else is out there. We've got a thin Whois model, we've got a thick Whois model, and then we've got what the applicant guidebook says.
And I think some of us have known this, certainly, and that is, in essence, the way Whois in the ICANN world is set up, you have as many, many data formats as you do registrars. And from a usability perspective and from a technical perspective, both, okay, those are not good design decisions.
Can I just respond to that, Bill? I think that reminds me that in Marina Del Rey, we actually had a recommendation that the data set be Wilfried, help me. We standardized this. This is not a short-term quick fix overnight, but there needs to be some standardization work to review the protocol, to review the data set that's captured with a view to making it standardized. Oh, right. Wilfried and...
Okay, so there are two views of this data. One is the set of data which is actually collected by the registrar. And then there is a subset of data which is actually made available on the query. So when we are saying that we want to standardize, quote-unquote, this data, are we talking about the data which is made available on against a query, or because what is collected by the registrar may actually be a little difficult to standardize?
Can we go? We'll go through the queue, but I've got Wilfried, Seth, and then I'll put you in the queue, Bill.
Yeah, well, it might be useful to revisit this thing after we have gone through the user interface study or user experience study. Yeah, because my feeling here is that we are still too technology oriented. I think the sort of we should tackle this whole thing with the mindset and the point of view of the consumer community, the end user community, because this is actually the target audience for this set of data. To some degree, there are others. I do agree, Bill. You are nodding with your head, and I'm in this camp as well. But a sort of, I would assume that this other camp is knowledgeable enough to find their way through the maze and through the technological shortcomings. Yes or no, maybe, but that's my expectation. But the regular end user is probably not in a position to do the heuristics, to have the helpful information, and to get help from some other parties. And sort of this is the reason why I would venture to suggest that it's a mandate for this group to have a little bit of a broader statement and to come up with some sort of maybe sub-recommendation under the headline of implementation to make both the ICANN infrastructure as well as the community start thinking about whether it's really necessary and helpful to have all these different variants, these different approaches to implementation. And just as I'm controlling the microphone for a couple of seconds, technology is subroutine. Anything or any infrastructure that is going to be proposed to do distributed stuff on top of the HTML web technology, URL technology, is bound to fail because the web has a serious birth defect. And this birth defect actually is that there is only a forward link between a referencing page and the linked to page. There is no linkage back, there is no mechanism to let the linking page know that the linked to page is no longer there. So it's just a technological shortcoming which makes all of those approaches eventually fail miserably.
Okay. Thank you, Wilfried. I've got Seth, Bill.
What point of information? Where's the screen and our online participants?
And looks as a direct reply.
Okay, I do not want to get down and dirty into the technical stuff because we'll be here all day. Okay, so please do reply, but keep it brief, please.
Very brief. We have backlinks, but we do not know them directly because they are not very common. But they are defined. Even backlinks between HTML pages are well defined and can be obtained from the W3C. There is no problem with.
I've got Seth and then Bill.
Yeah,
and then I'm going to try and pull together where we are.
So do we know where James and Sharon is?
They're back home. And they're not communicating.
They can
hear us.
Oh, good. So.
Did we miss a lot of comments? Can you go back a little bit?
I guess something that was touched upon in some of the draft or the chapters is you know why we're collecting the information we're collecting, and in other words, it seems like some of it's legacy, and it's confusing the consumer. So I think this is along the same lines as we've been talking. We're standardizing so that the consumer can find what they need, and the presentation is consistent across different registries or registrars, but shouldn't we also at the same time be revisiting what we're collecting and why? And again, the consumer study should offer possible solutions to that. So in other words, most consumers, when they're registering, don't understand the distinction between the various contexts, and so they list what they think they should be, but they don't really understand. So shouldn't we be revisiting the information we're collecting at the same time we're revisiting format and everything else?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the recommendations that we made in Marina Del Rey, is to revisit the data that's collected and why it's collected and for what purpose. I've got Bill, and then let's draw this discussion to a conclusion at the moment, if we can. I think that probably the best thing for us to do next is to look at the consumer study, and given the difficulties we're having with online participation, I suggest that we get the slides up on the screen. If I can have a volunteer to take us through it, anyone who's read it or feels confident or close to the subject, you can think about that while Bill's talking.
Okay, so I wanted to respond to Tarmud's question. We need both. Vilfried pointed out we absolutely need in my opinion, standardize the information that's provided to consumers. But in addition, there are things like transfers between registrars that need to be accounted for as well. And from what I've heard in the past year or so, this is an extremely difficult process, and I believe it's not only the only thing, but it partly is because of the different data formats that are being used, the different information, and then basically automating the transfers is extremely difficult. So having a mechanism that would facilitate that would be a good thing. It would also be a good thing for escrow accounts to make sure that data is in a consistent format. And then also on the backlink issue, having done a fair amount of hypertext, I'm inclined to side with Wilfried. Their HTML, the web, does not support bidirectional links. They're not in the markup. Given an arbitrary page, it's pretty much impossible because the information isn't there. You can do some things like back buttons, but that's not a pointer. That is not the same as a bidirectional link. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you all for giving this some airtime. And as Kathy said, I'm glad to have James and Sharon on the line. And it's frustrating, I'm sure, for all of us that we're not really able to hear each other or to have a full exchange. However, I think if we can just recap on the last 40 minutes or so talking about this subject, the approach that we're generally taking here is not to make policy and not to be too specific about solutioneering. We're here to review the policy, its implementation, and how it meets the legitimate needs of law enforcement and promotes consumer trust. The areas that I think we are agreed on are: consumers don't have a very good time finding this stuff, and that is supported by the consumer studies, both qualitative and quantitative. If they could find this stuff, they might use it more. I guess I'm taking that on from the quantitative survey that we've had. That might not be supported in evidence yet, but I think that there might be support for that view. I don't think we're going to get consensus on proposing a thick model. However, what I think we have all agreed is that whatever the policy is, it should be clear, it should be consistent, and it should be communicated. What we have highlighted is that there is a lack of consistency, and in the next 12 to 18 months, there will be less consistency than we have at present, and that this is not an ideal situation when we are looking. And I really like the way that you phrased it, Wilfried. We've got to kind of break out of our technology orientation here and be orientated towards the users of this service, who may not be as skilled as and familiar with the ecosystem as somebody like Susan or somebody like Bill, who are doing these searches professionally every day, or some of Sharon's team. Those are the areas where I think that we can agree. Do I have any? You're looking unhappy.
Well, I don't agree. But what I won't say, this is Susan, I don't agree with not recommending a look at a thick who is, but I don't, I I can live with recommending, having a broader recommendation that we look at another, that they should look at other ways of managing the who is information and making it available, whether that be, you know, well, I wouldn't agree to OPOC, but RESTful, I mean, there's a lot of different suggestions out there. People have given this a lot of thought, and I think that if we do not put something pretty hard line in the recommendation that they should, that this is a problem, the thick versus thin who is a problem because of all the issues it brings to a consumer looking for information on who runs a website, then I don't think we've done our jobs. So how we wordsmith that, I think I'm pretty flexible. What I'm not flexible and would not, and if we have to do this without consensus, then I'm fine with that. I know, I understand James has made the statement that we always have to be in consensus, but I don't believe that. I think that we need to definitely advise ICANN and make the recommendation, A, this does not work as it currently stands, and B, they need to look at whether and how many other recommendations of different types of mechanisms to handle the who is. I'm fine with that.
Okay, thank you for that clear statement. I've got a cue of Sarmad. Kathy, did you want to come in? Were you stretching or waving over there? No. Okay, so Sarmad and then Kathy, please.
So going back to the sheet which was passed around, in the implementation section, we said that after accuracy, we'll also add availability. But both neither accuracy nor availability actually address what we've been talking about, which is accessibility of this. So that's also something which we should look at. And then thin versus thick kind of arguments which we've been talking about is, I think what we're probably talking about is about consistency of this information. So maybe that's something we can say rather than saying thick slash thin. You know, so the point we are actually trying to make is that they should be available in a consistent format, perhaps.
And access. So these terms, consistency, accessibility.
In addition to availability and accuracy.
Yes, exactly. They're not instead of them, so they're not. You know, the clear steer we're getting from Susan is that she wants a statement about, if we've couched it in terms of accessibility, consistency, and the user experience, that would capture the problem, yeah. The problem statement.
I just have to say, from a record point of view, I wish we had gone out and talked to the registries and registrars about this. If we're talking about things that are of an advantage for the transfer of data, for transferring domain names, I think we're out of our league. That's not what we're looking at. Somebody mentioned transfer between, transfer of domain names between, you know, registrars. That's not our, and the consistency of that data. That's not our problem. That's another area of ICANN. I don't. But again, you know, it's the problem that really got to me, frankly, was not the general user experience. It was that law enforcement is having problems finding data in certain types of databases or finding data. Law enforcement is a user that we're focusing on. Mm-hmm. So again, without I like the direction of not coming up with solutions, pointing to the problem, and then, as with other things, giving the benefit of some of the findings that we've found to share that with the people who then go on to find the solutions. But, you know, I really wish in this area that we had spent more time figuring out, if this is where we were going, why the data is the way it is. And then, you know, it wasn't a question. We should have gone out and really questioned on thick thin if this is.
Okay.
Yep.
This is Susan. maybe we did not ask that specific question, but it is the community has brought that to us, and I don't think we can ignore it.
But we've never talked about with registered voters, for example.
Yeah, James talked about it in several of our meetings. The inter registrar transfer, I believe.
I think
that this is complex. We have heard it.
And let's clarify, we are a review team. Right. We are here to review the policy and its implementation, the extent to which it is effective and meets the needs of law enforcement and promotes consumer trust. If we identify a problem, and I think I'm hearing from around the table that however we describe it, whether we go thick, thin, and even talk about DNS protocols if we want to, or whether we want to throw it back and talk about the user experience, we're identifying a problem here. So I don't think that it's okay to backtrack and go, we need more time, we need to ask more questions on this, because it sounds like we're trying to avoid the issue, which, of course, we wouldn't be.
And if
so
we
I've got a queue of Bill and then Lutz.
And if we were to ask the question, why is the data in so many formats, the answer, I believe, is obvious. Okay? If we go back and read the historical record, who is, the protocol was selected because there was nothing else, number one. Two, there is no schema for who is. There never has been one, okay? And so it was left up to the implementer of each service to decide what they put in. And so...
And how they put it.
And how, exactly. So it grew organically like everything else on the internet, and so as a consequence, we have a mess. It wasn't designed. And I think it's fair for us to point that out. We don't have to be harsh about it, but just it is a fact. There are all these different data formats. It adds complexity to the system. That's not a good thing, right? And we don't have to say you need to change it overnight, but it's not a good thing, and we suggest finding a way to make it better. Simplify it, get it consistent, help users, help the registrars do the things that they need to do, and others. So.
Sure. Lutz?
Just to make my understanding clear, you are missing, for domain transfers, you are missing information about a reseller chain. All the people are involved in registering a domain name and freeing it for transfer. If you have problems with, usually I have the problem finding out who is involved between the final registrant and the registry, because there are a lot of people in it, and they are usually not listed anywhere. You have to ask the right people, and if the domain was registered to a customer for a long time, nobody on the customer even knows who had the contract to deal with this domain name, because the people are left the company. So we do not have the information usually on domain transfers. Who's responsible for, who to ask for, what's the reseller which sells the domain to the customer in the first place. Do I understand correctly that you have problems with such kind of information, finding in who is, because it's not there? First question. Second question to Bill. Yes, of course. We have a problem with implementation because it's not regulated in any kind what have to put in and what not have to put in, how to put it in. Raman can tell us a lot of stories on non-English who is responses. On the other hand, if I read the input from the CCNSO correctly, in most cases they are not allowed to put any information in beside this domain is registered or not. So they can't, from local law, put any information we are interested in into the WHOIS records.
Sorry, it's on a point of fact, that's not correct. That, okay.
Please tell it, Dinik.
Okay, Sharon's just put up, just to let everybody know, Gary Kibbe from her team will be joining us this afternoon and maybe can help out with some of the examples of the things that you were referring to, Kathy. So thank you, Sharon. Okay, I think that we've probably gone as far as we can for now. We will come back to this afternoon, tomorrow, until we're comfortable with where we are on it. But I think it's been very helpful properly to air these views. I think we're getting an idea that
we've got some consensus. We certainly have a consensus that the the current situation is not ideal. That and I think the thing about the standardizing the data set, all of this, there is a recommendation in that which may well be the most useful part of our work, actually. It would be certainly not going to be overnight, but the things that capture the IDN formatting, a standardized data set could be something that we can strive for. Let's leave that there. When do we have coffee? Can we just break whenever we want, or is there coffee? Okay, I think we've all earned a coffee break. So why don't we take 15 minutes now and then come back, and we'll just we'll cobble together what we can on the consumer study. I think that this will, where I'd like to go on the consumer study is, first of all, to take in what it says. Think about what it means for our report, how we would like to present the findings of this and the previous research that we heard in Marina Del Rey, and also what implications it gives for our own understanding of the consumers of who is. Who are the users of who is? Yeah? Who are we really talking about? Whose needs really need to be addressed in this? I think we've got all the information. It's probably just pulling it out, okay? So let's have our coffee and then we can think. So for remote participants, we'll be back at 5:05.